Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Hi, listeners.
Listen to the Books and Boosts podcast with me, host Anna Timperley, and
Marlena Lear, as we crack open a bottle, or two,
or three, and dive into some interesting books, airing the first Wednesday of every month. Bye!
Ladies and gentlemen, to another fantastic adventure here on the Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. I'm your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I'm joined as always by the deliciously stale co-host of mine, Mr. Josh Abraham Rutledge. What is up, Broski?
You know, living life. As of the recording of this episode, it feels like a countdown now. Like, I'm just gonna every episode be like, it's now 28 days away until I move. But no, that's what I'm in. And so
I feel like there's one listener that's like, God, I don't care. Just get to the paranormal shit. Come on, just get to it. I don't care. I live in Minneapolis.
Yeah. Right. The Twin Cities. Is that Twin Cities? Yep. Is that where that is? Yeah.
St. Paul in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, we got a cool show for everybody. We had this dude's dad on our show at one point, and now we've got the son. We've got Benjamin Eno coming on the show, the son of Paul Eno. We are so excited. We got to go on their show, which was one of the best experiences, legit ever, man. We had so much fun, and we have been frothing at the mouth to get Ben on this show because he is an interesting cat, let me tell you.
And these guys, you know, they kind of like are, you know, ghost people, paranormal people, UFO people. We got, you know, we had the father on, we got the son, we just need a ghost.
Holy Ghost. You know, the one thing I like about them is how skeptical they are, though, as believers experiencers. Like, I'm just very excited. I love how much they will shut you down so quick. I love it. Reminds me with Keith with psychics.
But also, you know, just when we were on their show, man, the conversation we started getting into with Ben on their show. I'm just, tonight's going to be an all time of the night, ladies and gentlemen.
Man, you're pumped, dude. I love it.
I am.
Well, let's go ahead and move on then. Let's get to our first segment of the night, which is Psychic Word of the Week.
And now, the Psychic Word of the Week.
All right, Psychic Word of the Week comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from Dr. June G. Bletzer. I miss you, baby girl. As always, we flip through the pages, and this time I landed on page 212. The phrase that grabbed my eyeball sacks here was Aetherian beings. Etherian
beings.
Okay. And I'm like, this is like He-Man and his crew, because weren't they from Etheria?
They were from Etheria. Yep. And wasn't it like Etheria like part of Earth somehow?
No. The king and queen were from Earth.
Yeah.
And they
ended
up on Etheria.
Right. Right. Yep.
Nerd knowledge right there.
I need a prequel series, by the way.
I know I would watch the heck out of a prequel series, but I think they figured out that they were from Earth on the He-Man and She-Ra Christmas episode.
Yeah, totally watch a prequel series. Anyways, go ahead.
Etherian beings, ufology is where this comes from. It says intelligences made of etheria substance, making their abode in the ethers. Although features, size, shape, and density are different from earthlings, they appear to be a living soul mind, invisible to mankind, but capable of materializing for one to perceive. Theory is in existence forever in the ether, as opposed to a discarnate human being who returns to the earth.
So this really sounds to me like the people that talk about beings of light,
mm-hmm.
like the light beings and stuff, you know, that not light beings as in like they're less filling than
zero beings, sugar beans.
but like the light beings.
Yeah, so right next to it is Etheria. It's a quick one, so I'll read that as well. Okay. Etheria says, the essence of all substances vibrating at different rates, forming levels and worlds and manifestations within these worlds, works under the law of intelligence. So that is intelligences made of that substance.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Very cool.
Very cool.
I mean, one could almost argue that the human spirit might be.
That's what I was going to say. The soul or a ghost or spirit. Yeah. I mean, you know, the invisible. I mean,
right
now you go down to quantum, you know, the quantum realm and things like that. You're like, well, what is invisible? You know, is something that is invisible? Is it invisible in the quantum realm? Like if you get down small enough?
And we've talked about the fact that human eyes see things different than dog eyes and butterfly eyes and everything else. So is it just invisible to us or invisible to everything?
Yeah. Reminds me that NPR series. I don't know if it's still on, but it was called Invisibilia. Really good, really good series. It just talks about things like that. It's interesting. Really, really interesting. Anyways, thank you, June G. Bletzer, wherever you are. Rest in peace, dear. Thank you for putting this book together. Josh, if you're ready, we've got a Bigfoot sighting coming up for our next segment, which is the Sasquatch sighting of the week. Sasquatch, Skunk Ape, Keith H. sighting of the week. What have we got?
Yeah, in honor of Bigfoot everywhere, and we get a whoop, whoop,
whoop, whoop, whoop,
whoop. Anyways, whoop. So this comes from, it's a couple years old. It's June 2008. From 2019 in New Jersey.
New Jersey. Hey, I know where that is. Yes, we know you're from New Jersey.
I was wondering if he was there tonight, but
he's always here. He hangs out behind the green screen so he doesn't get seen.
Yeah,
that rhymes.
So this was in Chatsworth, along Route 563.
All right,
and here we go.
On June 20th at approximately 6:40 p.m., I was traveling on Route 563 south of Chatsworth near the Franklin Parker Preserve Speedwell entrance. I was looking to see what the parking situation was for a future hike, so my eyes were on the right side of the road when out of the periphery, I saw what I thought was a groundhog on the left. It was very large though, and I realized that it would have to be a huge groundhog, so I looked fully to the left and I saw an approximate 3 to 3.5 foot tall creature stand up on two legs as it passed by. I did not get a good look at the face and I almost continued, but I decided to turn around about 150 yards up on the dirt road It's on the right. I pulled in and turned around and headed back to the location. There is a bend in the road there. It bends around to the right. On the way back, as I made it past the bend approximately 30 yards in front of me, the creature was still there. It was now fully turned towards me, and I could see that it looked like a cross between Curious George and the character Chaka from The Land of the Lost. Its face and hands, as well as the tops of its feet, were hairless and a light tan in color. The fur it was covered with was a golden brown, a little darker than a golden retriever, very much like the color of a groundhog. I could not see the nose. When I locked eyes with it, I could not see white, just big, dark brown eyes. It stood there for a second or two, then I rounded the bend, and it took off running back into the swampy area.
Get out. You know, I always think about that, man. Like, not all animals have whites of their eyes,
right?
You know, yeah. And so then you think about it, you're like,
and some animals do have whites of their eyes. They're just very small. Like I had a dog a couple years ago, and when you looked at my dog straight on, all you saw was his brown, the brown part around the you know, the pupil. But if you looked from the side, you did see a little bit of white on either side of his eye. It's just, it was very little, like, you know, some dogs don't. So yeah, I mean,
with my dog Kenobi, it's, man, when a treat comes out, he's half pug. That's when his pug eyes come out. And all of a sudden you see the whites of his eyes, man, like.
So, you know, don't fire the treat popper until you see the whites of his eyes. Is that what
that's exactly what I'm saying, man. He gets lit, dude. I mean, his eyes get so big, man.
It's like a Boston Terrier coming at you all of a sudden.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, them pug eyes are crazy, dude. Like, that's how you know from, he wants them. You know, he's either got a poop or he wants a treat.
Like the dude from Young Frankenstein, you know.
That, yes, Marty Feldman. Yeah. That's his name, Marty Feldman, man.
So, yeah, that, I mean, it's amazing, though, that so it's every other Sasquatch report that I've ever read, they get a glimpse and Sasquatch quickly disappears, right? This guy saw it and he passed it, turned around and came back and it was still there. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I just, maybe, you know, if this is a, is the, you know, implied that this is a juvenile, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe juveniles haven't learned to run away, or they're more fearless, right? Oftentimes, even as people, we're dumb when we're young, right? We do dumb things like stick around when we shouldn't. So yeah, makes you wonder.
Well, Josh, normally I would, you know, move on to our interview, but I've got some quick creepy catch up for you.
Okay. All right.
Creepy catch up. Y'all, it's creepy.
So it's been a hot minute since I've had some creepy catch up, since you've had some creepy catch up. Well, since my daughter has been born, I have been seeing shadow creatures like it ain't nobody's business, out of the corners of my eyes, in the corners of the rooms. For the most part, I have felt okay with this because I assume that it's relatives there to, you know, my grandparents and friends that I've lost that were like family and things like that, that are there. But then I had a night hag the other night that I haven't had in a long time, held down, which was really scary because I couldn't move my arm. So I thought I had, you know, if you didn't know, I recently broke my arm right before the baby was born, listeners out there. And so I thought that I had broken my arm again because I couldn't move it. And then I looked up and I saw the classic hag, the black on black red eyes and the hat, Josh. I saw the hat.
The hat again?
Yes. Batman. And so I saw that, freaked me out. I just told myself it was a dream, went back to sleep. That's fine. I haven't had it. This was the other night. And the funny part is I was not sleeping on my back. I was on my side. My arm was held down. I was sleeping on my side. But anyways, I was flipping through Tubi. I think I was flipping through Tubi TV because I watched that Hollow Earth documentary that you sent to me.
Yep.
And I was flipping through and this other thing popped up on, recommended titles. And it was like something like the shadow people or something like that. And I'm like, get out of town. How does Tubi know that I'm interested in shadow people all of a sudden? And it's Mike Rexeter. It's a series, and I'm going to send it to you because I've watched two episodes so far, and it involves the Conjuring House as well. It's pretty good. And I think we should get this guy on the show. But anyways, I was like, oh my God. And it was funny because even then they're talking about the Hat Man. He's having an interview with this guy about the Hat Man. And every time this guy would mention his story with the Hat Man, his Zoom would go out. Like it happened like 4 or 5 times. Like it was insane. Like it wow. was it's crazy. So I'm legit waiting here right now for this to go
for your
out
Zoom to go out. Yeah.
Couldn't believe it, man. But it made me a little nervous because I'm like, man, if there's a hag in there that close to my kid. But I'm like, no, I know I've got relatives in here and they ain't gonna let that happen.
So. Yeah, and I mean, I wonder if, like, you know, the energy associated with quote unquote new life is a similar type, you know, energy that, like, for puberty or adolescence or something like that, like this kind of ramp up of energy, and maybe that is an attractor it. Is that a word? For new, you know, for entities or relatives or whatever, you know, if it gives other beings the necessary energy to manifest.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, but it's weird. It's like I haven't had much creepy catch up in a long time, and then it's just hitting waves. You know, right now I see something out of the corner of my eye, but I don't feel scared about it.
It'd be interesting talking about our convergences, right? Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting where we've looked at, you know, adolescence and its relationship to poltergeist. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to look at, do people report seeing spirits or shadow people when they welcome home a new child in the home?
Yeah, we always talk about, just like you said, adolescence or even death, yeah. You know, that people see relatives and things like that. But yeah, what about birth? My sister definitely has some stories for sure about seeing my grandpa Bob. Even when Connor got older, he would say Bobbo.
Yeah.
So very interesting. Well, all right, let's get into our interview with Benjamin Eno. Let's dig deeper. All right, thank you. We are here with Ben Eno from Behind the Paranormal. What is happening, Mr. Eno?
Hey, you know, it's just another typical Thursday night here in very oddly warm New England. It was 81 today, which was very disconcerting after being 50 for most of the week.
Yeah, for me, I'm in Phoenix and today it was 89 and I was like, oh my God, it's so cold outside.
I know, well, try roughing it up here in the frozen chosen.
Because, dude, we get I think 5 straight days are going to be in the hundreds coming up. So I'm like, oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so 89 felt really good today. So I even had to wear my hoodie this morning. Like, it was like 65. I was like, I need my hoodie. I'm so cold. I've adjusted.
You know, like 14% humidity, though, too. So, I mean.
Yep.
Oh, it's dry heat.
Oh, when it's 14% humidity, people are losing their minds here. They're like,
Oh, it's like the problem with New England is it's like it's always just so humid. So it's you never just get a dry heat. It's always like 100% humidity.
That's Louisville Kentucky. Too. Louisville's in like that Ohio River Valley. So everything just gets trapped in there. Yeah. It is just it's like walking into a sauna or a steam room. Like sometimes you're like,
okay. It's good for the pores, you know,
and for the bugs to eat is.
Yeah, really. What it
is. Yeah, that too.
Well, I don't want to spend this whole episode talking about the weather.
It's about the weather. Come on now.
Hey, you know, we're doing professional radio small talk. That's right. What this is.
Unless we're talking about whether or not NASA has a cloud engine.
They might.
Actually, I don't know, man. The footage I've seen looks pretty legit.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, isn't Bill Gates trying to build like a... like something to dim the sun. I kind of skimmed over an article about that.
That sounds like a villain trying to get Superman. Bill Gates is Lex Luthor, is what you're saying.
Didn't Montgomery Burns like build some kind of gigantic thing that blocked out the sun over Springfield?
I think you're right.
Well, there's Bill Gates, if you're listening, stop.
I hope Bill Gates isn't listening. There's this English writer I really like. He's a former environmentalist, like hardcore 90s like environmentalist. His name's Paul Kingsnorth, and he writes in this really interesting way, and he kind of talks about sort of the problem of environmentalism not being a policy thing. It kind of turned into a policy thing over the last two decades, but his whole thing is it's a spiritual crisis, not like anything that's like we can fix with like laws. It's really interesting, and he was talking about that in this sort of like half narrative piece.
I mean, it really is. It's a change in mentality, right? It's a change in approach to how we as humans see and interact with the world. And that change in approach has to happen at that kind of spiritual level. We have to stop seeing the earth as something we live on versus something that sustains our existence.
Stop seeing something we live on, but something we live with.
Right.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I was reading something the other day that in the last 500 years, something like 355 species have gone extinct because of humans.
The extinction rate has sped up like just insanely fast over the last, I think, like, you know, just 60 years. It's insane. And it's like, you know, you wonder like, okay, well, you know, we have all these new programs and stuff. It's like, okay, you know, you'd expect it to do something. But one would probably posit that maybe the solutions, the technological solutions, are kind of part of the problem, kind of creating unintended side effects, if you will.
Right.
It's, you know, very short-sighted. You think you're doing the right things, but then it's like, oh no, it's probably having an adverse reaction.
Yeah, it's really even though you're replanting trees when you're ripping trees down, that's still a habitat filled with animals.
Learned something crazy about that specifically. So
Fern Gully? Yeah, I saw that movie too.
Fern Gully is just the Avatar before Avatar.
Amen. But
And there's Dances with Wolves.
And Dances with Wolves. But animated and better. Yes. And kind of like Secret of Nim, but not as dark. But you know what's interesting about the tree planting is that almost all of the trees that are planted are male trees. Because everyone forgets that trees have genders. Yeah. So everyone's complaining, oh, every year, you know, it seems like pollen's getting worse and worse. Well, it is, because there's more male trees being planted and no female ones. Oh. So there's all of this pollen that's just floating around up there that has nowhere to go. So allergies are getting worse and worse. So people like myself are just constantly sneezing for months at a time.
Come out to Phoenix. We don't have trees.
Oh, I know.
Shrubbery. Isn't that it?
Shrubbery and palm trees. No, I didn't know that it was mostly male trees. That does make a lot of sense. I never thought about that.
And some trees are self-pollinating, but they're not as many as the trees that actually do have to have a cross-pollination. So
right, exactly. Like up here in the Northeast, it's real bad. Like my father-in-law came out to visit because he lives in Henderson, Nevada. And he was saying, he was like, wow, I haven't been here. He hasn't been here in like 6 years. And he was like, how did allergies get worse? And I was like, I'll tell you why, Dave.
The more you know.
Well, sit down, father-in-law. Exactly. I'm going to tell you a tale about how trees make love.
I hope you're ready to be bored for 4 hours.
Oh, bored. No. There's a pun in there.
We'll find it eventually. We'll find it's just it. Dad jokes waiting to happen.
You know, you can't see the forest from the trees. So
I gotta go.
And no, that's a wrap.
But you know, you think about though the talking about the mentality of people and how we really have to change the way we look at the planet. And then now I'm gonna pull the extraterrestrial aspect in and the interdimensional being aspect in, because that also seems to be kind of the narrative for people who have had contact or abduction scenarios and things, that they talk about how they really just want us to like live in harmony with the planet, and we're killing the planet, and we have to do things to stop killing the planet and things like that. And so really makes, you know, if you adopt the idea that people are having contact with some potential other being in the cosmos, would they would an outside force be interested in our success on the planet? And if not, does that point to potentially an inside force?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
Good question, Josh.
Because I always like to point this out to people. There's an essay, if you ever have time to read it, it's by Thomas Nagel. He was, or he still is. He's a philosopher who specifically focuses on phenomenology and the human experience. And he wrote an essay called "What Is It Like to Be a Bat?" And it's a really fascinating look into can we know what it's like to be a bat? And the ultimate answer to that question is, well, no, we know what it's like to be a human consciousness in a bat, but we will never know the experience of flying around like a bat or thinking like a bat. We would just know how to be a human inside of a bat body.
Mm. Right.
So I always find it fun when people are like, oh, well, you know, the ETs want us to do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, okay, cool. Why would they have the same morals as we do is my question. If they're utterly alien, they're utterly other, right? You know, they're mm-hmm. one could assume in some cases, not all, because there are some cases I've heard where they could be time travelers. There's that whole dynamic, but there are some where it's like, okay, are they just altruistic, galaxy, surfers,
Jesuits.
Are they Jesuits?
Space Jesuits.
They're looking for spice.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. But exactly. In this case, we might expect it because, the planet is kind of imploding. But why would somebody who's completely other, care about this kind of backwater little marble in the middle of nowhere? And, I have to then stop myself and say, well, I wasn't there. I didn't experience what these people did or saw or whatever. My only question is, I guess, discerning what the other's motivations would be.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing that gets missed. It's like, okay, well, here's what they said. Bop, bop, bop. And it's like, okay, well, why?
Right.
Let's assume that they do, right?
Well, think about the Star Trek, like the Prime Directive, right? It's like, don't mess with them if they're not at that point. But at that point, then we can send in the cavalry if they need help.
That's true.
Essentially, it's like, we'll let your planet burn to death if we haven't made contact yet. But if you got a warp drive, we will save you.
Mm. No, it's true. But then there's the other flip side of the coin. Like, well, you should take care of the planet. But it's like, okay, great. Well, how? Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, the first idea, which we've kind of adopted over basically the last century or so, which is, okay, well, technologically, scientifically, we'll figure this out and we'll be able to get there. And that so far that hasn't happened yet.
Right.
We might. There's a possibility, but the problem is the almighty dollar kind of comes into play, right? and then it stands who kind of makes the most money off of it, right?
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then how would one go about doing it? My whole issue with this is I don't think technology is the answer. I think the opposite is true. I think stepping away from it and kind of reassessing what the center of our society is right. Mm-hmm. So the whole environmental narrative is based around, all right, humans bad, technology bad, but then somehow it changed. And it's like, okay, well, now technology is going to save us somehow, and we're going to do X, Y, and Z in order to do this. But then it ends up being sort of like a funnel where a bunch of, basically the five richest people in the world get a bunch of money out of it. So it's right. Like, all right, well, how is ET going to help us with this? I'm wondering, I really wish I got a chance to kind of talk with more people about it, because I've run into them a handful of times at various conferences, and I've never gotten a chance to really kind of expand on, okay, well, do they have like a 5-point plan,
right,
that they have, that it's like, okay, first step this. But a lot of it is kind of almost like prophetic in a way. It almost sounds like a religious prophecy in a sense. And that kind of brings up a different question, which is, kind of what's the spirit of this age, and how does, let's say, I don't know, a higher entity interact with us if there's only that sort of portion of society that responds to futuristic technology, right? Or sort of interdimensional things that at one point could just say, hey, pick up this rock and do X. Now it's like, all right, here you go. Here's this. And now figure out how to fix this.
But I think also, if we are, this is going to be a series of ifs, right? So if we are, if we can accept the idea that that people are being visited or contacted by some sort of higher intelligence, and that higher intelligence seems to have an interest in our future survivability on this planet, and they want us to seek out ways to ensure our success or viability on this planet, it's very possible that those higher intelligences would have a means to do so. But would it be like showing a smartphone to a colonial?
Again, this is the prime directive. Right. I mean, this is part of that. One of the reasons they wait for the warp drive is because once they've hit warp capability, they're smart enough to gather the future tech that is out there, right?
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's I'm gonna take this in a reverse direction, timeline wise. Because I think it's really important to point out how technology has affected us, you know, over the years, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a fun Socratic dialogue between Plato and Socrates, and Plato is talking about the god Thoth, the Egyptian god Thoth, mm-hmm. and he brings down writing to the Egyptians, and Plato's like, "Wow, isn't this great? You know, we have writing, we can write down all these things, and you know, this will be awesome. We can write books." And Socrates says, "That's not great. That's terrible, because then people are going to forget things." And so we use technology in a way to kind of control the world around us. And we use it in a way that's we sort of give up sort of different powers, and we sacrifice different abilities that we have in order to control the world around us. But in effect, we don't really control the world around us anymore. We end up just giving control to something else. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, there's a game we all like to play, especially people who love films, right? Where we will name a film and we'll say, all right, you know, let's talk about Mystery Science Theater 3000, right? You know, you know, old school sci-fi nerd loves Mystery Science Theater 3000. All right, well, who's the guy who created it? Joel Hodgson, right? Yeah, so cool. All right, well, who played Pearl Forrester in season 9? And it's like, oh, geez, I know like Mary Jo something or other, but I don't remember her last name. And so you think, and you try to think as long as you can until you're like, all right, I guess I'll just Google it.
Yeah.
Prior to that, you didn't just Google it. You just kind of had to like, all right, well, we'll figure it out somehow. We'll go find, you know, the VHS tape, you know, flip on the back, look at whoever and all that. But prior to that, it was a memory game, right? Yeah. And people would do that with everything. You know, remember when this building was here? Remember when this building was here? And it's we've sort of given that up in favor of sort of this seemingly limitless knowledge.
Wow.
But here's the thing, it's unfiltered knowledge. You can learn all sorts of stuff, but it's incredibly unfiltered. Like, I can tell you all sorts of useless facts about things, like how, you know, I learned how manatees stay buoyant, and I learned that and it was useless. And it was like, okay, well, now I learned all these things. And it's like, all right, well, I've given up all of these abilities just so I can do this. A buddy of mine's a seventh grade math teacher, and he came over and he was having dinner with my wife and I, and he was like, oh, I'm doing a test for my seventh graders in math. Can you guys do it? And like, you know, tell me how hard it is. Let me tell you, I struggled so hard with a seventh grade math test. And like my job, I'm effectively an assistant project manager for like a commercial construction company. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have to know how to do like algebra and basic math. And like, let me tell you, seventh graders, man. Oh,
best of luck to you. Best of luck. That's why I love that show, that Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader show. Because,
oh, yeah,
it's fantastic because, boy, the amount of knowledge you forget over time.
Honestly, yeah, because we've sacrificed it in order to gain greater control over the world, right? Mm-hmm. So now let's take this sort of scenario and move it into the present. Technology's done some good stuff for us. We're all in different parts of the country right now, and we can talk, which is cool, and we can share ideas. But one of the interesting things I heard from from it was some podcast I was listening to, was, is it true connection? Are you truly connecting with people if it's at this distance? I mean, I'd say yes. Yeah. But there's something about the physical interaction that where like you see that other person, like, hey, you know, I'm not really super dressed up right now. You know, I was in my work clothes, and then I just was like, nah, it's like 9:30 at night. I'll switch out into something more comfortable. So, right. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you are you really connecting with somebody? And so with this idea of sort of moving forward with technology, do we think it's helping us or hurting us? And I'd say it's kind of doing not a lot of great stuff for us. I think it's separating us a lot. And I think since COVID's kind of happened, we've learned a lot about ourselves. Yeah. We've learned a lot about ourselves, and we've learned a lot about the world around us. And we've learned A, how fragile it is. And B, we've learned how fragile we are. And C, we've learned that we're a lot more isolated than we realized we were. Yep. And we've sort of built ourselves into these sort of Black Mirror-esque boxes. And my sort of question to people is, okay, well, you know, if these are advanced, quote unquote, races from other planets or other dimensions or other multiverses, right, coming here to help us, you know, how would giving us more stuff, you know, help us get better? And that's sort of my thing with that, because I think a really important thing that we've kind of lost in the Western world, at least, and soon to be the whole world. I took a course in college, and it was probably the most useful one I ever took, because I barely use my major. I'm using it now because audio engineering.
Right.
When I was in college, I took this course called Religion and Globalization, and it was effectively an anthropology course. And it was run by this woman who worked for the UN for a really long time, specifically in, like, you know, dealing with other cultures, you know, spiritualities and stuff like that. So like Shinto and all that stuff. Really interesting lady. Tulasi Srivas was her name. And she brought up this point that, like, you know, there's sort of this narrative that people live in, you know, and they have a story that they're a part of. But in here in the West at the time, this was like 2014, so it was a little bit different than it is now. Here in the West, there's sort of this sort of like, okay, well, we're kind of all the main character in our own story, and we're all sort of playing our part, and everybody else is just kind of like extras. And I don't think that's true. And I think the paranormal is a really interesting narrative to be a part of, because I think it explores this sort of fringe of sort of the narrative of society. It's a lot of stuff that people have forgotten, right? Whether it's cryptids or, like, you know, the possibility of you know, other life on other planets, you know, the idea that on the fringes, you know, monsters exist and things that are mixes of different things and stuff that's on the outside that people, you know, they like to think about, but they never experience, or maybe they do and they don't know how to deal with it because they've either been told, okay, well, yeah, that's not real. Or, like, you know, you're just kind of making it up and get gaslit, basically. Or, you know, there's no room for that narrative to exist. So I think what we're experiencing now, and I'd assume that you two probably experiencing the same thing, is this sort of re-enchantment of the world, right? Mm-hmm. The sort of portion of reality is kind of becoming more fantastical, but in a good way, where we can interact with sort of these other worlds and these other portions of the story that we've been a part of the whole time, but we've kind of just forgotten about. And I think this sort of narrative with, you know, extra ET coming down and saying, hey, fix the world, is a small part of this story that we're all a part of. You know, whether they're in it for good or for ill, the thing is, something's happening. But the question is, what is happening and how are we perceiving it?
So I think that I want to touch on a couple of things, Stefan, and I'll let you jump in. But so number one, I think that we as humanity, somewhere along the line, we developed a complex where we require something to save us. Right, we constantly look for the savior aspect. whether you're a Christian in or any religion, and you look at your gods to save you, you look at or you're a full diehard ET believer, ET will save you.
Or if you yourself have a savior complex and you're going to save people.
You're going to save the whole world, right? But for some reason, we as a collective society constantly look at something else to save us.
Mm.
So to think about your piece there around, giving us something to technology to save us or something like that. But when you really think about it, it's more of a, I think this is probably from the Bible, but I can't remember, but it's more of a teach us to fish versus give us a fish, right?
Mm.
I think that's really the way that that real change happens is when we humans figure out what we humans need to do to change our reality. And then secondarily, I'll say that the other piece is, you talk about the kind of myths and legends and lore that have been with us for thousands of years, but yet in the last 100 to 200 years, we've kind of forgotten about them, right? With fairies and leprechauns and all this kind of stuff that our ancestors would offer sacrifices to and offer presents to and put out cakes and fruits and all these things.
Mm.
Are ETs just that same consciousness, that same fairy leprechaun consciousness?
And so therefore
their interest in our saving the earth is because they're here sharing it with us.
Mm.
See, now that would make more sense. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really interesting point. I guess I'll go one at a time here. I should have a piece of paper. I should be writing this down. My ADD is just going crazy.
That's okay.
There's a really fun sort of story. If we're gonna take the Old Testament here, because there's a lot of fun stuff in there. In the book of Isaiah, there's a really fun parable where Isaiah is talking about idolatry, and I'm gonna do a little quick aside and do a little fun thing where idols aren't bad because you're making something. Idols are bad because you're trying to capture a spirit and use it to basically control the reality around you.
Right.
That's why idols were bad. And so that was sort of the idea behind it was, okay, yeah, we're going to build this thing. So like, the Tower of Babel is a good example. That was essentially an idol to try and capture, Yahweh, the Most High God. And that's essentially the sort of, that's my little side thing on that. Anyway, So in Isaiah, he brings up this really interesting point where he says, okay, well, this woodworker hears some guy talking about Baal, and he's like, wow, I really like that. I'm going to take Baal as my god. So he goes out and he grows some really beautiful trees. He cuts down the trees. He's making this beautiful, sort of like little, like, idol for himself. In that time, he's feeding himself, he's feeding his family, he's still doing his work, and then eventually he does his thing and he makes this little idol and he's like, great, I have it. And the hero of the story is not Baal, but the hero of the story is the craftsman, because he did all these things, not Baal. He did them. Mm-hmm. he was able to feed himself. Baal didn't feed him. He grew the trees. Baal didn't grow the trees. He cut down the tree. He fashioned the idol, and Baal didn't do that. He was like, yeah, so the whole point of the story is the human did it. The mm-hmm. human had more power than the idol did. And so that's the whole moral of the story. And I think that's a great illustration of we do like to make idols out of things. Whether it's celebrities or rich businessmen or thinkers we really like, or our own ideas or ourselves, right? You can very easily get caught up in, well, I'm the smartest guy there is, kids. And
it's like, Josh.
but at the end of the day, it's like, we don't really know a ton. And But the one thing we can kind of know is that we can kind of forge our path But the question is, what do we pattern ourselves after, right? You know, we always look for a savior of some sort. And whether it's, you know, Bill Gates building his Bond villain-esque inventions there, or Elon Musk taking over Twitter, you know, it's like, oh, this is great. We're going to do this. Yeah, I work with a couple of guys who are just like that. And it's like, they're like, yeah, this guy's going to do this. And it's like, yeah, this guy's going to do this. They can do no wrong. And it's like, okay, man, I don't know if that's true, but okay. Because it's like, at the end of the day, they're all human too. And I think it's important to realize that, you know, most of these saviors are kind of like, humans too. But even if it's an extraterrestrial savior as well, they're not human in this case. But but at the very least, they might be. They could be time travelers is the thing. I know, right? Play the track. It's so fascinating to kind of take that into account, because it's like, you know, at the end of the day, we're the ones kind of interpreting the messages and saying, okay, well, they're saying this. It's people who are experiencing these things and bringing forth the messages. It's not, you know, some grays like landing, you know, in our front yard and slapping us in the face and telling us, you idiot, you know. it's people delivering these things. And so our roles in the story are not merely victims or not merely just experiencers. It's like, you know, we're all vital in this, and we're all in the process of it. Moving into the next part here, it's fun, because we're going to go back to idols again. It's connected in a way, because how do you welcome a guest into your house? You know, you let them in, you offer them something to drink, something to eat, and presumably if they're not there to murder you, you know, everything goes fine. And, you know, if they are there to murder you, maybe that, you know, a beer and like some pizza will calm them down.
Well, I don't know. Garlic, they could have been vampires and you invited them into your home.
they could be vampires, and then you better find your holy water or holy salt, depending on your persuasion, or both.
Garlic salt. Garlic holy salt. Oh, man.
The triple threat. But you would presumably offer them something in return. And I heard this really fun lecture by this guy who's he's not just a biblical scholar, but he's also a scholar on YouGov. And he's made this really interesting point where he was like, yeah, you know, what do you do if you encounter like some cosmic entity, right? You're not really sure what to do. You're like, I guess I'll just offer them food. So you offer them food by burning it, and then you partake in the meal too. Mm-hmm. So that's what the oil was for, right? So, you know, you go to the temple of Zeus, and yet you have your oil and you have your cakes and you burn them for Zeus, and then you have a little bit for yourself. And so maybe I could argue that they might be extraterrestrial entities, because I think breaking down the word, it's not really of Earth per se, it's something extra, it's something outside it. And something on the outside, you know, there's this whole sort of fun you know, ancient worldview where, you know, there were no sort of separations of experience, right? So, you know, if you look at a textbook, you know, any modern textbook, you know, you look at Egypt and you see, okay, well, you know, the Pharaoh was a guy, you know, they thought he was a god, but he was just a guy. And he symbolized X, Y, and Z, and all these political things happened. And oh, by the way, going on at the same time, Osiris was constantly, you know, dying and being reborn, dying, reborn, dying, reborn. And it's like, okay, great, cool. Every year they do this whole thing, but it doesn't matter, because what matters is the political side. Yeah, the way it was experienced was, all of it was going on at the same time. There was no separation of layers, right? So fun fact, if you went back in time to ancient Egypt and said, okay, where's the Red Sea? They'd be confused and say, what are you talking about? Because they didn't know what the Red Sea was, because it was called essentially, bad translation, the Great Green of the East, which would be the modern day Red Sea. But they did have a thing called the Reed Sea. And the Reed Sea was sort of the Egyptian version of the River Styx. And so the fun thing was, it was a physical place, but it also symbolized and in effect was the Reed Sea. And so the whole symbolization, but also the experience of this, you know, you see it in Exodus, and you can probably find it in some fun Egyptian myths, is this whole sort of experience of a physical place having another part to it. because there's no separation in reality. Mm-hmm. It's just, mm-hmm. this is, there's another side to everything. Right. So even from the most mundane things, there's a spiritual aspect to it. Right. You know, that's why, you know, liquor is called spirits. Right.
Right.
So it's, so there's an aspect to it that's, you know, this is, there's something more to it, right? Even the most mundane things. So in effect, yeah, sure. They could have been extraterrestrials that are sort of messing around in our reality. You know, I think ancient aliens might have a point, but I also don't want to diminish the human element because humans aren't stupid, right? We've been able to do plenty of things without help for centuries,
yeah,
and we've been able to screw up our own planet without any help. So hey, you know, we must be pretty good at something.
Right.
So I think it's a possibility. I wish I had more fun things than just mythology to point to, because I think the important thing is mythology as we understand it isn't just, you know, okay, well, these are just fun stories, you know, to kind of explain lightning. This was like, these were narratives that people lived in, right? Like old rituals, you know, were basically people reenacting stories. You know, like I learned this today, that apparently Greek tragedies were reenactments of terrible events so they wouldn't happen to you. So it was like, you know, you do a terrible thing to counteract a terrible thing.
Right.
That's why, you know, one of the things that Roman or Greek citizens usually had, if they had like any amulets or anything like that, because amulets were a big deal for warding off curses and stuff, they'd have like a Medusa head, and they'd wear that in like a necklace or a chain or something. And that was because something so horrible happened to Medusa that maybe if you wear this chain, nothing horrible will happen to you. So it's interesting because these whole little portions of culture have kind of just been lost over time, mm-hmm. Especially here in the West, where it's like, you know, we do all these rituals all the time, like shaking hands, like, but we lose the significance of it, yeah. Whether it's something so simple as, okay, well, we're shaking hands, you know, not just because, okay, well, we don't have weapons, right? You know, that's the surface level thing. But the importance of the right hand, especially in like, you know, ancient, you know, belief in like the Mediterranean, was that the right hand was power. It was like the symbol of power, you know, because people would, you know, do everything with their right hand unless you're a lefty. But if you were a righty, you know, you'd do everything with your right hand. So you're showing that you're, you know, not trying to kill somebody, but also like that you're sharing power with this other person by shaking hands. And so it's these little things that we've just lost over time that I think we're kind of getting back slowly but surely, even if it's just through these narratives that we're experiencing now in the paranormal, between, you know, upright canines, because that's not new, right? People descending from the sky, not new at all. A lot of these things really aren't very new. You know, you could probably find them somewhere. I mean, there's some odd stuff.
It's interesting because you're right about that, because like handshaking is this brave thing now. Like, we just got a new guy at my work. And he, you know, we shook hands, we're new guys, but like COVID still has me scared, right? And so it's a big, bold move to shake someone's hand these days. And so there's power in it again. And
oh, yeah.
it's this really, because it means something even more than just the elbow bump or the fist bump, right? That everybody started doing. If you're shaking hands with someone, it's a huge deal right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, it's all these little things, and it's funny. Like I said, re-enchantment, right? You know, we're experiencing it every day, you know, and it's, whether it's, you know, by kind of being more conscious of the world around us, you know, not just like, okay, well, I'm sitting at my desk, but, you know, there's unseen things, also seen things that are popping up,
yeah.
You know. And it kind of meets us where we are, right? You know, it's why I've been honing my opinion on this for years, why people sort of experience different paranormal phenomena differently. And I think it's just because of how we approach the experience. It's just very individualized. Like how I would experience, you know, seeing, you know, an apparition could be different from either of yours, right? Or,
right.
You know, maybe we'd see something completely different. I don't know. It's such a fascinating thing.
You know, I've often thought about, do we experience it differently, or is it presented differently to us?
That's a good question. I wonder that too, because I worked a case a long time ago. I think I was like, geez, I must have been like 20, 21. And my dad didn't want to go. He was like, it was some paranormal group outside of Boston. I can't remember their name off the top of my head. But my dad was like, I don't want to go. You can go. And I was like, okay, sure. So I drove my little Geo Metro up there, and
already brave.
Oh yeah. I had like one of the had a banana yellow Geo Metro that was a convertible. And let me tell you, that thing was terrible.
No sharp turns, boy. Let me tell you. I've almost flipped in a couple of them. So
I know the only thing holding you together is rust and a convertible top. It's pretty rough. So I made my way up to this case, and we get to the house, and the house is essentially it's an older place, but it's kind of nice. You know, we get there, and there's like three psychics running in. There's another guy running in. There's like four guys with like, you know, sound gear, you know, everything you can imagine. I'm just standing there like, all right. And so I walk in, and they're all running around and doing all this stuff. And I walk up to the lady that owns the place. I'm like, hi, my name's Ben. You know, I'm going to walk around. Can I get my impressions? And then I'll come back here. So they're all running around and, you know, getting in each other's way. And they're all in the backyard like, oh, we found something crazy. And I'm just kind of like sitting in the attic, and I'm like, ooh, this isn't good. There's, we got two sort of negative entities here. And so I walk back downstairs, and I'm like, all right, miss, let's have a quick conversation. So I run through a questionnaire we have, and I'm like, how's your electric bill? She's like, it's pretty high. I'm like, okay, great. Is it unusual? Yes. Great. And I was like, is there anything I should know about? She's like, well, my son barricaded himself in the basement with his girlfriend, and they've been doing like black magic or something. And I was like, oh, that's not good.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah, it's probably not good. So, you know, the other people are running around. They're like, oh, there's like, you know, dead children in the backyard, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, you need to calm down, because this lady, like, I was like, hey, first of all, you either need to kick your kid out or like, you know, get him away. And then two, you need to go to like, you know, family counseling. That's what you need to do. Like,
yep.
Get some help, because this is like that's just not good. And they're like, oh, well, we can just do all this stuff. And I was like, all right, no, we're experiencing two very different things here. Because I was like, I'm seeing this kid in the basement, like, you know, just doing God knows what, and I'm up here, and this lady's like freaking out. She's got another younger kid, and this little kid's got like bruises all over him, getting thrown around and stuff. And I'm like, oh, it's not good. All right, so let's like, all right, I was like, this is what we're gonna do. Just go and do this. And so I haven't heard a thing since, so presumably, knock on wood, everything's okay, you know, because I last I heard, she got the kid out, which was good.
Yeah.
And so I was like, that's what you need to do. But we experienced two different things, and a part of me wonders if it might be a mix of both. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the phenomena catering itself to what we're expecting, but also our interpretation of what we're expecting, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like pareidolia almost, the phenomena, yeah. The audio phenomena where you think you're hearing something, and then your brain tricks you into thinking that you're actually hearing it. Yep. So it's similar to that, I think. You know, the human brain is a very powerful, powerful thing, but it can lead us astray, that's for sure.
Well, let me tell you what, I could go on for another 40 minutes for sure, but I think we are nearing time. I actually had three more follow-up questions that I left to hold.
So
thank you so much, Ben, for being on the show tonight. Give people a chance to where can they find more about you, where mm-hmm. can they find stuff that you got going on?
BehindTheParanormal.com is kind of the main website that'll give you all the information on our show, podcasts, you know, and if you want to get any of our books, from mine, mine and my dad's, to just my dad's, he's got some good ones out there. You can find out all that stuff on there. We're on YouTube as well. Any major podcast platforms, you can find us, Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Ben Eno.
Great. Fantastic. All right. Ben Eno, hero of the paranormal. Thank you so much for joining us, man. We would love to have you back anytime. You take care. Woo. Thank you so much, man. Benjamin Eno, man.
I knew going into tonight I was going to love it. And yep. I was not disappointed.
That's right. Ben Eno. Ben Eno. It can be found again. Just a reminder, BehindTheParanormal.com. That's with his dad, Paul, and Ben Eno. You can check out their show. It's absolutely fantastic. Get their books. Get all their stuffs.
Get it all. Catch it all. Like Pokemon.
You gotta catch them all. Exactly. But thank you, Ben, for coming on, man. You are welcome on the show anytime. We loved having you. Josh, we got to start wrapping up and get out of here. Make sure if you want to check out our archived shows, even from the Fearscape Paranormal podcast, go to theconvergenceenigma.com. Big thank you to the UnX Network, as well as the Fearscape Media Network. We love you guys so, so much. That's what I'm saying.
Yep. And then if you don't mind, if you have an opportunity, you're like, hey, I'd like to add a new t-shirt to my wardrobe. Mm-hmm. Jump on over to theconvergenceenigma.com/store. Constantly uploading new designs. My favorite so far is it's a picture of Bigfoot and it's being like unzipped and there's an alien on the inside.
Yeah, so. I like that. I like the engineer one with the creature from the Aliens movies.
Yeah,
I love that one. Even our buddy John in the UK, he got a couple t-shirts. So we do, it ships internationally, let me tell you. So all of our listeners in Sri Lanka, if you guys want a t-shirt, you can get one.
You can get one.
Yeah. But anyways, thank you guys. This has been Stefan. Just a reminder, keep your eyes on the skies.
This has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, never stop questioning. Never stop searching. Good night, everybody.
Good night.